People are capable of the most incredible feats. I believe every single one of you has a wealth of untapped potential. And within the episodes of this podcast, you'll hear stories of people tapping into theirs. My wish is that you rethink, rediscover, and re-evolve what's been inside of you all along. It is said that you die two times. The first is when you take your final breath, the inevitable flatline, and you lapse into the great unknown. But the second time is the last time your name is spoken. How you choose to live your life and who you decide to become determines the time between those two deaths. It is time to step up. The possibilities are endless. You are worthy and you are limitless. Hey guys, thank you so much for joining me. And it is my pleasure to introduce a really good friend of mine. I'd say one of my best friends. This guy, Dane Tefaropo Robertson, started off as one of nine siblings, which is just crazy in itself. And I'm sure he's got some crazy stories around that. But he is now a mental performance coach, a mindfulness and meditation expert, a male empowerment coach, and a public speaker with a real focus for leading the next generation of men into a greater understanding of their true selves. And after a massive shift, I guess earlier this year, Dane walked away from his past life as a corporate sales superstar, moved to Bali in October with his now wife, as in they just got married a few weeks ago on the beach in Bali, and is living a true digital nomad lifestyle. I have so much love for this guy. He is the New Zealand Jon Snow. Welcome, brother.
Thanks so much. That's a pretty epic intro. I'm quite flattered. Thanks very much.
Who's that cool guy?
Yeah, I'd like to meet that guy.
So, right, I'd just like to go into a wee bit of your backstory and how Dane as a child really evolved into who you are now, you know, meditation expert, male empowerment coach. How does that whole story join together?
Yeah, I guess the best place to start is at the beginning, really. So
Genesis.
The genesis of it all. you pretty much had it bang on the head, except I was one of 10 siblings. So cut a long story short, my mother and father, they seemed as though they enjoyed children. My father had four children, five children, including me, and my mother. I have to keep reminding myself as to how big and who had what. And my mother had six children, including me, which meant that there were 10 children overall. Wow. But all of them, my half brothers and sisters. So before there are any questions about, you know, family Christmases and birthdays and all that sort of jazz, I never really got to hang out with all of them at one given time.
Yeah.
Especially considering, so my father was 12 years older than my mother. He'd already had a life before he'd met my mum.
Mm-hmm.
And in that, he had a couple of sons who had passed away before I was born. So even before I was born, I had two brothers that had died. One died in a car crash when he was 16. Another one died of cot death under the age of one.
Shit.
My older sister on my father's side moved up to New Plymouth in New Zealand, which is about 4.5 hours drive away. So we never really got to see her that much except when she hitchhiked down and hung out with us. And my other brother, who is 20 years older than me and is the oldest of my siblings, I never actually saw him. I may have seen him maybe twice or once or twice growing up. And a few years ago, I got the news through my niece or her mum, actually, that my brother had actually committed suicide a year before I'd found out. So that's kind of the family dynamic on my father's side. Very, very scattered, but I'd always known that I'd had older brothers and older sister, and I was part of something greater than I was, you know?
Yeah.
And I think, and this is something that we'll touch on later, I think everything that happened, you know, before I was born contributed to the way that my father was and kind of contributed to the setting and how I grew up. But we'll get to that stage later.
Yeah.
On my mother's side, however, so my mother has six children, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Yep, six, including me. My oldest brother is 10 years older than me, my mum had him when she was 17. So I don't mean to bore you with all the dynamics and everything, but it's a very complicated family dynamic.
A lot of moving pieces.
My brother, who's directly older than me, who's 5 years older than me, was actually fang-eyed out or adopted out within the family. He didn't grow up with me or grow up with our family. But funnily enough, him and I are the most alike out of myself and all of our siblings.
Wow.
And then I've got three younger siblings. I've got two younger sisters and a younger brother, and they're awesome. And I hang out with them real frequently. I really enjoy catching up with them. In fact, one of my sisters has a son, so I've got a nephew on that side. I've actually got four nephews and a niece. So it's a pretty broad family spectrum.
Yeah.
It's just all over the show. And when I tell people that story, they either switch off straight away and don't want to hear it, or they're just confused by the end of this conversation.
Yeah. How does that work again?
Yeah, so you've got blah, blah, blah. I actually had to get tattooed on my arm so I didn't forget. So I've actually got a couple of notches on my right arm indicating how many siblings I have.
Wow.
But, so that's the family dynamic. And, you know, taking all that into account, it really shaped me for who I am now and who I was, you know, as I was growing up.
Yeah.
You also mentioned, the hardships of growing up and everything. So to touch on that a bit more, so my mother and father, my father was an alcoholic. He died of alcohol-related poisoning, liver failure, when I was 16 years old. But
Jesus.
Throughout my whole childhood and teenage years, he was a raging alcoholic.
Mm-hmm.
He was a functional alcoholic. He could go to work every day, but every day he'd, you know, get on the piss. And when certain events happened in my life, or even, you know, just random times, he would come home drunk and there would be a domestic violence issue. And my dad was very violent when he would get drunk. Fortunately, not to myself, but to my mother, he would, you know, let his fist fly. And to my mum's credit, she kind of gave her own back at some stages as well. But even growing up, I knew that that wasn't what I wanted to be a part of. That wasn't who I wanted to be. That wasn't, you know, the anger and the dread and that sense of just of impending, I can't really quite describe it. It's just a feeling in your stomach where it just feels like absolute dread, but it's worse than that. That feeling there, I knew I just didn't want to be a part of that as I was growing up.
I cannot
from an early age.
That, man.
Yeah, it's, and saying it, you know, I do agree, you know, that there are other people out there who have had, you know, worse things happen to them.
Yeah.
And so my story is not one which is rare, and it's not one which I'm saying, you know, is the worst thing to happen to everyone in any given time. But
yeah.
It's more of just a light for people to see, okay, well, this person's been through that, and, you know, if this person can do that, then I can do it too. But yeah, that's a conversation probably later in the podcast. But I knew from an early stage that wasn't who I wanted to be. To the point where I actually decided, and I made a promise to myself that I didn't want to drink, because I saw what alcohol did to my father, my mother, and everyone around. So I made that promise to myself early on. When my father passed away, everything changed. My mother moved away from me. I was 16 years old. She moved away from me and left myself and my brother, I was 17, left myself and my brother to basically live our lives down in Wellington, where we were, which was good and also not good in a way.
Mm-hmm.
Please stop me if I'm boring.
Not a story.
There's a lot to kind of go through. Yeah. So we kind of hung out, myself and my brother, and we grew really close. We grew really close and are still really close to this day. And I attribute a lot of my nerdy aspects of who I am. I embrace the nerdy aspects of myself, but I attribute a lot of it to him because he's a brilliant mind. He's the type of person that you could tell him something and he would just learn the whole thing.
Awesome.
But in saying that, he also, you know, he teaches himself every instrument, plays all the instruments, loves classical music. He loves Star Wars, loves computer games. And because he loved that, then I naturally gravitated towards all of those things. And yeah, that shaped a certain part of who I was. Growing up as well, I was huge and still am huge into rugby and sports. My father was massive as for encouraging me, and also my mother was too, for encouraging sport. And so that developed a side of me as well. So what I had when I was growing up, and especially through my teenage years, was I had this part of me that was a nerd, loved Star Wars, loved computer games, loved, you know, all sorts of, you know, nerdier things.
Yeah.
But then I also had this jock part of me who loved rugby and sports and was really good at sports.
Such, you know, an growing interesting up. Dichotomy.
Oh, yeah, it's fascinating. And so as I was growing up, I was kind of caught between these two worlds of, you know, who actually am I? I can't fit in that group and I can't fit in that group.
Yeah.
And that just played on me for what I didn't realize was well over a decade.
Yeah.
And that was just a constant internal ongoing struggle within myself to try and figure out who I was. And it manifested in a lot of different ways. But one of the ways that it did manifest was, so I made that promise to myself that I wouldn't drink early on in my life. And when I was 17, I actually broke that promise to myself, and I started getting into alcohol. And then the spiral began. I started drinking more and more and more as I got into my mid to late 20s.
Yeah.
Early to mid 20s, I started drinking every weekend, you know, as rugby.
Yeah.
As the rugby culture is, you kind of drink or you're
weird.
You're weird. Yep, exactly that. And so I just found myself getting into the spiral and spiral and down and down and down. And when I got into my professional, when I started getting into the professional realm, when I was working full time, I was good at sales because I knew how to relate to people. But as my sales role started to intensify, then so did the culture that came with it. And with a lot of sales cultures comes addiction and drinking and drugs and this whole kind of cacophony of just these behaviors that didn't really serve who I was and wasn't really who I wanted to be.
Mm-hmm.
And so the spiral just kept getting, you know, lower and lower and lower and lower. And towards the end of it, you know, I was drinking a lot, still gymming and still, you know, playing rugby and doing a lot of sports and everything, but I was still drinking a lot and started dabbling into drugs as well. And then that's kind of the end of that chapter of the life, was just kind of getting to that point and realizing, shit, this isn't who I want to be.
What do you think brought about that reflection?
A couple of things. So I really think that the relationships that you form are key with what happens to you in your life. You know, if you surround yourself with losers and drongos, then chances are you kind of probably turn out like a loser or a drongo. You know,
yeah.
It's the garden that the flower is planted. It helps the flower to grow.
I've definitely experienced it myself. Like one of the sayings that I quite like now is that you become the average of the five people you spend the most time with, and it's almost like no matter how hard you try not to, it's inevitable.
Yeah. Yeah, you naturally pick up things from the people that are closest around you, the behaviors, the mannerisms, the speech, the thought patterns, every single thing.
Yeah.
And so that's one of the first things is realizing that I was kind of coming to the realization that I had a good person around me. Now, I didn't actually realize that until later in the piece, and that's probably something we'll get to in a bit as well, but that was the first thing, just having a stable person around that could help build and foster the right type of attitude and the right type of being. And that was the first thing. Second thing was learning how to meditate, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And this was something that was hugely profound and actually shifted a lot throughout my life. And I don't say this as an advertisement. I say this as the God's honest truth, which is it actually changed my life. And I didn't realize that it did until 2 years down the track when I looked back on my life and thought, you know, what's brought me to this point right now where I'm, you know, doing awesome at my job. I've, you know, manifested all these awesome things into my life. I feel completely happy. You know, I've given up drinking. I've done this, and that. What was it that really, that was the turning point, the moment that I could directly attribute to this whole shift? And it was meditating. And I still remember the very first moment where I came across meditation.
Yeah, I was going to ask.
It was actually by chance. So I was actually with my now wife Libby. We were in a relationship, but we still are in a relationship. But we're kind of in the beginning stages. And she was in Asia at the time, Southeast Asia, and I was back in New Zealand. And I was just sitting there, I can't remember, I was just flicking through YouTube, just as you do at bloody 11:30 at night after 2.5 hours of scrolling through nothingness.
Yeah.
And I came across this video of astral projection, and it was from a channel called Spirit Science.
Mm-hmm.
And people may have heard of that, but it's a fascinating channel. I absolutely love it. And I came across this video and astral projection. And for those that don't know what astral projection is, it's a way of leaving your body with your conscious mind still intact, but your physical body is still, you know, blissfully asleep. It's mm-hmm. like you're just drifting around, you're walking around fully consciously aware and awake, but your body is just asleep in one place. It's a fascinating concept. I haven't done it myself yet. That's why I call it a concept.
Yeah.
But I have read and done reviews and, you know, listened to people who have, and actually, you know, a couple of my close friends or a couple of my friends have astral projected as well, and they say it's crazy.
I haven't had astral projection, but I've had like a full out-of-body experience while I was still conscious. That was fucking crazy.
Exactly that. And it's hugely crazy. I don't know what it's like, so I can't explain or tell people the benefits of it, but I assume it is just nuts and crazy and eye-opening and just an awesome, wicked trip, like you're on drugs or something. That's my interpretation.
Yeah.
But I saw this video and I watched it and I thought, holy crap, this is awesome. I want to fucking do this. How do I do this? And the first step was to meditate. And so I thought, fuck it, I'm just going to do it. I'm going to start, boom. And then I just started meditating, and that's how I came across it. And as the days progressed and as time got on, I started to develop and really enhance my meditation techniques. It started, first of all, with just chucking some headphones on, some binaural beats, and allowing shit to just process and go. And it's ramped up into, you know, wonderful and new ceremonies and all sorts now. But that was the crowning moment. And when I looked back and saw it was that moment, I thought, holy shit, this is revolutionary. This is life-changing. This is something that everyone needs to at least be aware of or know how to do properly. And then when I looked at my corporate world sales that I was working in and looked at the rugby community and the world that I was in there, I just realized that they probably hadn't had as much exposure to that mode of thinking or those sorts of techniques and exercises as what they possibly should have.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's kind of how I started to get into what I'm doing now.
Wow.
Yeah, so that, almost like
a chance occurrence at the bottom of the YouTube rabbit hole.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, I say the word chance quite loosely because I don't believe, you know, I don't believe in chance or coincidence. There is just incidents, and you take a situation like that and you roll with it because you know these things are put into your life for reasons, and you can pick them up or you can shun them aside. But if you keep shunning them aside, they're going to keep coming up until you pick it up. Totally. And if you don't pick it up, then there's a whole another process for that, which I won't get into. But it's just funny how, you know, exactly like you mentioned, a chance occurrence like that has ended up shaping this whole new mode of thinking, this whole new way of being, and this whole new life of, you know, what you see and what you hear and what you're listening to right now. It's just, it's quite amazing, really.
Was it pretty confronting at the beginning, getting into mindfulness and really understanding that? Because for me, when I started getting into mindfulness, one of the confronting things was really understanding that I was the one in control of my life. And like you were saying, nothing was by chance. It was all a culmination of my choices. Was it really confronting heading into that? Or was it more a process of finding yourself again and really getting to know who your true self is and what your true self wanted?
Yeah, it was more of the second. It was more of, I didn't find it confronting at all. The more that I did this, the more that I went within myself, the more that I found myself, the more that I found out more about myself.
Mm-hmm.
And so by finding out more about myself, I realized that if anything confronting had come up, then it would have been a barrier to me finding out more about myself, which was the opposite of what I should be doing. I shouldn't be putting up barriers to find out more about who I am. I should be learning more and understanding more. And I guess coming from a Māori background, and you know, myself being half Māori, I was already integrated into a world which was already of the metaphysical, which was already of something that was deeper, mm-hmm. of something which I didn't know what it was. I don't know what it is. I still can't 100%, and no one can.
Yeah,
can 100%, you know, put their label on it and hang their hat on it and say this is what it is.
Yeah,
but I knew that there was something there. I always knew that there was something else that needed to be understood. Mm-hmm. And so by meditating and being mindful and going within myself, I realized all of those questions that I had when I was a child started to come into my life and almost be answered through the process of meditation and mm-hmm. mindfulness and learning more about the spiritual aspects and the spiritual side. And yeah, it just answered a whole lot of questions, burning questions that I'd put aside for so long, you know, from my teenage years, early 20s, mid 20s. I just put those questions away. I don't want to deal with them. I wanted to just focus on
what were some of those questions?
So questions like, you know, who am I? What's my purpose? Mm-hmm. What do I actually enjoy? Who do I want to be with? Who am I? What types of things really ignite my flame? What types of things bring me joy and passion? And you know, as I started to go more within myself, I started to realize, you know, my passion was to connect with people and to deal and to help people and to lead people and to. I really wanted to be a person that other people looked up to, and I found that out within myself. I've also found out that it was, you know, time to get away from this whole perception of myself that I didn't want to lead people, that I was reluctant to lead or reluctant to share my opinions or step into a leadership role or become that person that I idolized so much. You know, it was okay for me to do that. And so going within myself allowed me to really embrace that and answer that aspect of myself. So, yeah, it's the more that I got into it, the more that I understood. And just like anyone that meditates or anyone that, you know, looks within themselves for answers, the more that you look, the more that you find, and you keep finding, and you keep finding until you get to the root causes of, you know, why you do things the way you do.
Why? Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
So how long did it take you to come to the conclusion that you wanted to stop drinking again? Because now you're completely sober for how long?
What month is it? We're almost 3 years now.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah.
And so how long was it, you know, diving into yourself and building that internal relationship that you came back to that conclusion that you'd already made when you were a child to not drink alcohol?
It was fascinating, actually, and it wasn't as clear cut as that, as just me realizing, and I'll explain why. And it kind of relates back to an early point too. So, so what actually happened was the moment that, so myself and my wife decided to give up drinking, an incident occurred. And to cut a long story short, basically this incident was so severe, that my wife, I won't explain the incident for her sake, but basically, my wife decided that she couldn't drink anymore.
Yeah,
and not many people know this, but we actually broke up for a week over that period because the incident was just so severe.
Wow.
And she made this realization in hospital. She said, "I can't drink anymore." And she called me, you know, 4 or 5 days after it had happened, or maybe I called her. The details are hazy, but we had this conversation. And when she said that, I told her, I said, okay, well, I'll do it too.
Nice.
And without thinking that, those words just came out. And I'll tell you what, if I hadn't have been as focused on development and self-development and aware of what was actually going on, there was a chance that I could have said no. There's mm-hmm. a chance that I could have been like, okay, well, that's your journey. Yeah. I'm going to do me and do this. But that's not the way that this works. You know, a couple is a couple for a reason. It's to, you know, lean on one another. And that's what I mentioned before about when you asked, you know, what was the crowning moment or what were the reasons that allowed me to become the way I am. And it was the relationship that I had. And if I hadn't had, you know, this relationship with my now wife, chances are I could possibly still be drinking.
Yeah.
I could. I wouldn't know. But the combination of those two things of one, meditating and knowing exactly who I am, and two, having that incident happen with someone that I deeply care about and is now my wife, you know, the combination of those two things allowed me to give up drinking and never look back. There have been very few moments where I've thought, I'd like a drink now, but there would be very few and fleeting. There have only been, maybe I can count on my hand how many there have been.
Was it difficult at the beginning of that process for both of you guys or either of you?
So Libby more so. Mm-hmm. Myself, not really. I think what had happened was I'd taken more of a staunch role in the relationship, more of a role of strength where I was the pillar, and then this is what I was thinking. This is my mode of thinking, was that I was the pillar and I had to be there for support and strength. And so because I had that, I don't want to say distraction, but because I had that role in the relationship, then I wasn't as focused on drinking. I wasn't as focused on going out with the boys. And to be fair, I never actually enjoyed alcohol, which probably made it easier as well. Like, I hated the taste. Found myself lost whenever I'd go out with the boys. Like, I'd just end up by myself. Like, it wasn't a pleasant experience.
So interesting. It's the same with me.
Yeah, it's not fun. It blows my mind now, but that's topic for another day. But I found that probably because I was the pillar in that scenario, that I was able to distract my mind away from my own issues, if there were any. I don't believe there are, because I don't feel or have any resentment or any built up anger or issues towards it. I think they've all kind of been processed, but during the earlier stages, I think that's what happened. And for Libby, she was a lot worse off, and took her a lot longer to, I guess, process and get through it. And that's her story. She'll be able to. She may tell you one day.
Yeah.
It's. I think the power of two is better than the power of one. Two heads are better than one. Mm-hmm. If you've got both of your energy in the same direction, then it helps propel both of you forward.
Yeah.
If you've got your energy scattered, if you're both looking in different directions and you don't know what's going on in front of you.
Yeah, exactly. And I think if you're focused on a common goal, it's not even 1 + 1 = 2. It can become a synergistic relationship.
Oh, totally. And you feed off that and you build off that and you grow off that. And it's just, that's how her and I, that incident has laid the foundation of our relationship, funny enough. Two heads are better than one is the same thinking and same ideas that we have now with a lot of the ways that we are and we be. So it's interesting how that kind of plays out later in the piece.
And so Libby, because I know she's super into mindfulness and meditation and spirituality now, was that something that she was always into, or did she really kind of learn off your example of doing that for yourself and going through that yourself?
Yeah, I think what I did was I rekindled something within her. Mm-hmm. So she was, and she may tell you this, but she was in a relationship, as everyone is, was in a relationship before me. Where she was with a guy and he was actually incredibly spiritual. So he opened her up to the whole spiritual aspect of, what's going on, all this, all that. So before she was in, when she came into the relationship with me, she was already, I guess, attuned to that way of thinking.
Yeah.
But over the time, because it was a couple of years between him and between myself, between that time she'd lost it and she'd become distant from that way of thinking. But also, her upbringing had allowed her, or her had shaped her into a mode of thinking where it was bad, mm-hmm. where this meditation, not so much meditation, but this spiritual aspect was, the work of the devil.
Yeah.
Her parents were Christian. Uh-huh. And so her whole thinking was, what we're doing is bad. Wow. So she'd shunned that out for so long. And it wasn't until recently, maybe 2 or 3 years ago, that she really picked it up again.
Yeah.
And over the last, 2 to 3 years since she's picked it up, she's had to retrain her brain to think that, what we're doing is not the work of the devil, it's the work of the soul and the work of the self.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think myself getting more into it allowed her to reopen her mind again, and now she is flourishing and she's, doing amazing work.
Yes.
But it was just, I think it was just one of those things that had to happen, just like myself giving up drinking, just like myself scrolling through YouTube and finding that clip. It was just one of those things that had to happen.
Yeah.
In order for us to get to where we are now.
I really want to ask you what your personal definition of meditation or mindfulness is. What is the reason for doing so?
So the line I give to all my students and and clients and people that I work with is meditation and mindfulness are two separate but effectively the same thing.
Yeah.
Meditation is, I'll explain mindfulness. So mindfulness is the complete focus into the moment that is here and now. It is, if you're sitting down in your chair listening to this podcast, it is listening to the words that are coming out of my mouth. It is looking at the thing that is in front of you, whether you're on a train, whether you are in bed, whether you're at the kitchen table, whether you're wherever you are. It's looking at the thing in front of you. It's taking in that exact thing, whatever it is. If it's an apple, you are studying that apple. You're looking at that apple. You are just being present in this moment, taking in all the sensory information that is going on around you. You're smelling the apple. You're smelling the roast vegetables or anything that's cooking. You are hearing the words that are coming in through your ears. You are tasting whatever it is that is still in your mouth. You are seeing the things as they're happening. And it's about bringing your focus and awareness to that moment without attaching any sort of judgment, without attaching anything else that needs to be, filtered through from the past or the future.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just experiencing everything in the moment as it is happening. Meditation is the complete switch off of the brain so that you're able to not so much refill it, but reprogram and allow the important stuff to come in. So as everyone is aware, the brain is just constantly going with thoughts and shit that comes in, 60,000 thoughts a day, whatever it is.
Yeah.
Just heaps of different crap that is coming in one ear, going out the other ear.
Yeah.
And it's never off. That's the thing. Meditation is the process where you basically switch your mind off and you allow only what needs to come through. If this is another form of meditation, you allow the messages to come through that need to be heard. Mm-hmm. You don't allow the thoughts to come in and program your mind. You just allow the messages that need to come in to be heard. And it's about switching off that mind or that brain for that split second, that minute, that 20 minutes, that you can really start to see the benefits of actually noticing your thoughts and noticing what is happening and noticing what is going on. Mm-hmm. And once you notice what's going on with your brain, then you can figure out ways to change it or adapt it or mold it. Or if you start to notice that you're having negative thought patterns, well, then it's about changing those. If you've got positive thought patterns, well, then how do you replicate those? And so it's just a process of that. So real simple definitions. Mindfulness is about bringing the attention and the awareness to the here and now as it is happening. Meditation is the complete switch off of the brain.
Awesome.
That's pretty much it.
That's gangster. And so if someone was really looking at getting into either one or both, what's your number one recommendation? Because I know it's a practice, right? Like one thing with me in the past is I'm super competitive. So the first time I ever sat down to meditate, I felt like I failed because I felt like I was trying to really force something, to come through, like a message, or there was, I couldn't switch my brain off. It was so difficult. And at the end of it, I didn't try meditation again for a long time because I was like, it doesn't work for me. My brain's too busy. I'm, the wrong kind of person to do this. And I know there are so many people out there who have probably had that sort of experience where they've tried meditation or mindfulness before. They haven't been able to shut up the brain noise. They haven't been able to come to the here and now. And they're a little bit, discouraged from trying to do it again. But I understand that it's a practice And that's why it's called a meditation practice or a mindfulness practice. So what would your advice be to those people who may have tried it and felt like they failed or haven't tried it before because they don't think they could?
I think a lot of people get thrown in the deep end with it. I think it's just like, you know, learning to swim or riding a bike. You know, you don't get chucked in the deep end before you can swim.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people pick up mindfulness or meditation in a place which is probably not at their level. You know, if you're just starting out meditation, it's no point going out and, you know, checking on a astral projection meditation for your guided meditations or anything. You know, that may work. It may be helpful.
And looking back at my first experience, that was exactly it. I put on a guided meditation, and this guy started talking, and then he was talking about being like visualizing this thing. I was like, what the fuck does that mean? I've got no idea what you're talking about.
Yeah. And that's it, you know, cause you know, straight off the bat, you know, it's hard to sit there and visualize if you're coming out fresh and you've got all these thoughts racing through your brain and you're listening to this guy saying, yeah, visualize yourself in a field, a meadow, and blah, 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 blah. And chances are you're probably going to think of it for a split second or maybe 10 seconds at the very most, and then go back to your thought pattern. So then you instantly associate a judgment with that. You judge yourself to be a failure. You judge yourself. And then once you start getting into that pattern, then it's kind of hard to get out. And then once it's hard to get out, then you don't see the true benefit of meditation. You don't see the... what you're intended to get out of it, and you kind of get discouraged and you don't pick it up again because you think, fuck, it's a waste of time.
I can't do it.
My brain. Yeah. I must be one of the only people in the world that can't meditate. and you chuck it all away forever.
Yeah. But I'm fundamentally flawed. Let's move on.
Exactly. Yeah. My brain's fucked. Screw it. it could end up in that. But I think a lot of people, they kind of start at the wrong place. And for me, what I tell the people that I work with, you know, just start real small. Start at the most simplest, most fundamental things that you can do. And one of the things that I've done, before for a lot of my clients is to say, you know, just focus on before you get up out of bed, you're lying in bed, before you reach for your phone. And this is something that I know that you do quite a lot. And Viola too, is just to write down, you know, what you're grateful for, or just to think about what you're grateful for. Like, holy shit, I get to wake up in this bed.
Yeah.
You know, holy shit, I get to wake up under a roof. Holy shit, I am alive today.
Yeah.
Holy shit, I've got the love of my wife next to me. Mm-hmm. Holy shit, I'm wearing pants.
Why the fuck are you wearing pants?
Even the smallest thing. the aircon's 18 degrees in Bali. It's a good starting point is just to realize, you know, what you're appreciative of, and then not placing the judgment on that appreciation, just accepting that you have those things and just appreciating it. And then what that does is it raises your vibes. It raises your vibration instantly, straight off the bat. And the more that you do that practice, the more that you do that, I like to say for the first week or two, you just do that. You just focus on being grateful for those things.
I love that. And of itself, that's a mindfulness practice, isn't it? Because it's bringing you to the here and now.
Completely. You are here right now and you're focusing on your pants that you've woken up. You're focusing on, you know, the bed that you're lying on. You know, you're bringing yourself to the here and now. It's a very simple practice, and I would start by doing that. And just like anything, just like going to get a personal trainer at the gym, you know, you don't start off on bench, you don't start off squatting 120 kilos, do you? You start off with some mobility tests. You know, you try and figure out what your range of motion is like. You try and figure out, you know, how much you can actually start to squat with. You do all these tests before, and then you build it up. We do the fundamentals. You do the foundation work first, and then after, you know, 4 weeks, 6 weeks, then you start adding some plates onto the bar, and then that's when you start squatting, or that's when you start seeing the results. But it starts with the work, and a lot of people, and you know, this is a common cliche, you know, they want things right now. They want that instant mindfulness and meditation zen-like state to be right now.
Such a good analogy, because I think people can relate to that, right? Like, everybody's trying to squat a world record squat on day one.
Yeah, you go into the gym and you see dudes ego lifting with 160 and they're only getting down halfway, and they're like, that ain't bad. Yeah, it's the same with this, you know. It's the same with, you know, you're checking on a meditation, you're getting into astral projection guided meditations when you're only 4 weeks in and you still can't really switch your brain off. You're going to get some, benefit, but you're not going to get the intended benefit and the full benefit. You might only be getting 20% of that benefit.
Yeah.
You know, so it's about realizing that it's a long process. It's a process that you need to be committed to, and it's a process that you need to understand is going to take, you know, more time than probably what you intended. But the beauty of it is that you get to see the process. You get to see every single thing that happens. You know, in week one, you may uncover something about yourself that you never even thought. In week three, you may remember back to your childhood about all these traumatic past events that you thought never existed, but you've just been suppressing. In week six, you may realize that you've got a poisonous relationship with your parents. And that's the process there. And then once you overcome those hurdles, then you really open yourself up to a greater self-image and a greater self-worth and a greater person that you want to become. And you're inevitably happier.
Yeah.
You're 100% happier in that process and yourself and the way that it's gone. So, yeah, long-winded answer, but the short answer, start off with gratitude. Start off with just waking up in the morning before you check your phone, before you kiss your wife, before you go take a piss. You sit there and you just think of three things in the morning, three things: bed, wife, hands, whatever it is.
Awesome. And so how did you start to incorporate, you know, because we've had many a super spiritual conversation, which I fucking love, probably on a different level than, you know, people listening to this podcast for the first time. But how did you start incorporating more of those, you know, spiritual aspects into your practice and, you know, really getting deep within yourself and creating that understanding spiritually?
So how did I get the spiritual aspect into the meditation? Was that the, question?
Yeah, like, was that just a natural progression? Was that something that you discovered along the way, or was that something you added on top of?
No, it was so I was quite fortunate to always be a spiritual being. When I was 15, actually, here's a story for you. When I was 15, my mother took me to go see a psychic, and I'd always heard ghost stories of family members, and, you know, my mum always warned me against playing with a Ouija board and all sorts of, you know, weird and wacky stories. But I'd always been around spirituality in a form, you know, Māori spirituality.
Yep.
But I was also intrigued with religion, and I wanted to try and understand what the connection was between, you know, the paganistic and the indigenous religions with the Western religions, and what the message was, how it all interrelated and connected. And so what actually happened was I was fascinated with this whole world of spirituality. Couldn't hang my hat on it, but just knew there was something there.
Yeah.
And then when I started getting into meditation and the spiritual side, it all started to make sense. And it was funny because everything that I'd learned from my Māori side, from the indigenous, and what I'd learned and understood from reading and listening and watching other different indigenous cultures, you know, the Native Americans, the Native Australians, the Mayans, the Incans, and taking all that knowledge, and then also taking in the Western religion model, the Christianity, the Catholicism, Muslim and Buddhism, because they're not exactly Western, but those sort of theologies, taking into account all of those and then integrating it with the spiritual side that I'd started to find throughout meditation and mindfulness, it just all started to click.
Wow.
And it was all the same thing. It was all the same message being said. It was all the same oneness within. It was just varying degrees of the truth. And so for me, learning more about meditation and mindfulness and getting more into those practices allowed me to connect what I'd already known within myself and already learned externally through books and videos and everything. with this whole concept of spirituality, which just seemed to make sense and seemed to flow.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was a really interesting kind of time as I was starting out the process. I think the first 6 months to a year, as I was getting more into the spiritual side of meditation and mindfulness, as I was starting to get more into that. And don't get me wrong, you can do meditation and mindfulness without the spiritual aspect.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't have to be solely reliant on you must be spiritual now. It's, you know, you can do it for the, you know, for all the associated medical benefits and health benefits. But for me, the fascinating side of it came when I started learning more about it. And first 6 months to a year was a massive integration process and a finding out process and learning process of how everything was just related to one another. Yeah, it was fascinating.
What's the, I want to ask, what's the craziest spiritual story you have?
Now, I probably, I went to see a psychic once.
Yeah.
This is, I only say this one because it's the first one that's come off top of the head. But I went to see a psychic when I was 15. Actually, the story that I was starting before. I went to see a psychic when I was 15. My mum took us there, and this lady was a gifted psychic. She would write everything down.
Yeah.
And so how it would work is I would ask her questions about someone, or I'd give her a name of someone that was in my life. I'd say my mother, and she'd write down all the stuff. Anyway, so I gave her some names. I said, my brother, Charles.
Mm-hmm.
And she started writing down all the stuff, blah, 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 and it was all 100% accurate. And the one thing that stuck out for me was he is a lost soul. And she wrote that down, and it just made 100 complete sense. 100, what's the word? Complete sense.
Yeah.
Gosh, my brain is mush. it just made complete sense, because that's exactly what he was. And then as soon as she wrote that down, I knew that everything that she was saying was 100% legit.
Wow.
I asked her a question about one of my best friends at the time. Me and him were like, you know, best buddies, like, you know, 15 years old. Hey, man, we're going to be friends for life. Yeah. Fucking yeah, bro. Fuck, awesome. Anyway, the first thing she wrote down was flash in the pan. We'll be gone by next year. Sure enough, he was gone.
Jeez.
But then the thing that really stuck out was I asked her about my dad, and I said, oh, you know, what is it about my dad? Asked about him. And she wrote down, he is a madman. He will soon get what's coming to him. And then the next year he died. We're like, holy shit. Like that was pretty, like that was one of the things where I look back onto this day and I'm like, fuck, there's definitely something.
That's crazy.
Yeah. There was definitely something there. Like that was just nuts. But I don't think that's the craziest thing, but that's just one of the things that has happened, which has just been nuts.
Yeah.
I mean, I've had like awesome meditation sessions where I've seen different things and been able to heal the past and everything. But
yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
And so what's the aspirations for future Dane? You know, what do you really aspire to do through this whole discovery process? What do you think you've discovered about yourself, or the thing that you really feel like you're drawn to that you want to pursue for, not necessarily the rest of your life, but at least for the, you know, the near future and beyond.
Foreseeable future. Yeah. For me, and this is something that's come up, you know, recently this year, and I've been thankful enough to have some amazing coaches and amazing guides in the present. One of them being your wife, Nick.
Yeah.
And another one being a good friend of ours, Hannah Joy.
Yeah.
And one of the things that has really come up, so they've helped me to stand into my leadership and stand into the place that I want to be. But one of the things that I'm hugely passionate about and have a massive drive towards at the moment is reconnecting the male of today with a more empowered version of himself. So one of my titles is a male empowerment coach.
And yeah.
What that really means is allowing men to be okay with who they are and not have to put up this wall or this facade,
yep,
or, you know, be okay with talking about things that would traditionally be taboo for a guy,
mm-hmm,
or allowing men to be nerdy but also be a jock.
Awesome. You know,
be this way, be spiritual but also be a sales superstar.
Yeah.
Allowing men to to stand in that power and not feel so unempowered, disempowered with who they feel they need to be. Because at the moment, I look around, you know, a lot of the guys that, you know, I've grown up with and have been around, and we seem to just be kind of drifting through and just accepting things as they come and not really pursuing anything greater, or just kind of falling into the patterns.
Yeah, I see that as well.
They have to, yeah, and just feeling as though they have to be this way. They have to be a guy which is, you know, staunch and, you know, doesn't talk about their feelings, or, you know, has to drink beer with the lads and gets into fights and, you know, is too, I guess, closed-minded to see other aspects and avenues. And I think over the generations and over hundreds and thousands of years, you know, we've kind of developed the male psyche into a way which is resulting in so much that is going on in the world around us.
Yeah.
That I think it's time that was changed. I think it's time that we start to be okay and happy with who we are.
Yep.
I think it's time that guys at least show their happiness.
Yeah.
You know, show that they like to smile and like to be around guys and, you know, say I love you to the bro and, you know, do all those sorts of things, because it's not soppy. It's not, you know, it's not sissy. It's not gay. It's not, you know, it's not weird.
Yeah.
And please, I apologize if the words I'm saying are offending to anyone that's listening. I'm not intending, you know.
But that's what you hear.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's what you hear. You know, when you go to the rugby club and, you know, you're not drinking, it's like, oh, you're a pussy. Are you gay? Are you a fag? Oh, yeah, weird. Like, it's those words that come out. And, you know, it upsets me to hear those words that come out, because that's coming from, not only is it a shit word to come out and they're shit words to come out and be spoken, but they're coming from a guy who is completely disempowered because of the way that he thinks, the way that he thinks because of his upbringing, because of the friends that he hangs around, because of his parents, because of his parents' parents, because his parents' parents' parents were abusive. And it's just a cycle, and it's this ongoing cycle.
So instead of this war that you see at the moment, like, I just see this constant war against masculinity, right? Especially from, you know, some of the modern day feminism. It's more about redefining what masculinity actually is and bringing it back to its true meaning, which is actually empowering and supportive and loving and beautiful.
Yeah, totally. I think, you know, the way that feminists define the term masculine is one way that has been shaped by society. You know, society has shaped the word masculine into, you know, this definition here, and feminists have a disagreement with that word of masculinity.
Yeah.
And the problem is that 90%, oh, it's just generalization, but, you know, 90% of the world is, or 90% of men are defined by that version of masculinity. So feminists have the war against 90% of the people that conform to that word of masculinity.
Based on the acts of 1% of that people.
Sorry, what was that? You kind of cut out a bit there.
So they're basing judgment on 90% of the world's population based on the acts and the attitudes of less than 1% of that population or that demographic, right?
Yeah, I guess, and this is just my judgment. This is just my opinion of what's going on. But, you know, they feminists have, I guess, this view of masculinity, and they go to war against that. Whereas, you know, the course of action that I'm trying to take is to redefine that version of masculinity, that definition of masculinity. Because when you redefine that definition of masculinity, and you change it to something which is wholesome and loving, and accepting, and so broad, and, you know, open-minded, then feminism won't have a war against it, because they see themselves in those definitions as well.
Awesome.
And so then it becomes a, you know, a stalemate, and, well, not a stalemate, but the war ends. So then, by redefining that version of masculinity, and the thing I've come to realize is that version of masculinity has been around for thousands of years.
Yeah.
And in order to change that, it's going to take some strong individuals at the end of this line. And I say the end of this line is it right now, because, you know, to change cycles, it takes a strong person to go back and heal everything.
Yeah.
And you know, that person, you know, for example, let's say, you know, I was able to heal my father's story. I was able to heal his father's story. I was able to heal his father's story. I was able to heal my mother's story, my mother's mother. You know, I was able to heal that by allowing it to happen, not so much allowing it to happen, but allowing myself to go back and heal that.
Yep.
And so that example there is what needs to happen with, you know, all of these disempowered groups, all of these people that come from families that have, where the mother has had to give birth to the child because she was raped, or, you know, there's been domestic violence in the family. So the child grows up with this distorted view of love and, you know, takes that out on their part, future partner. So, you know, that person needs to heal that story. So it just becomes ongoing, this ongoing process of just healing that person so that they can heal what's happened before them.
Yeah.
And that's effectively what, you know, I want to help do. And for me, the acts and the practices of meditation and mindfulness help profoundly and immensely with those sorts of things. Because once you meditate and you become more mindful with what you're experiencing and why you're experiencing it, then you can go back and think, okay, well, why did this happen in my life?
Mm-hmm.
That happened because of that. Okay, well, now I can heal that. Maybe I'll process that. And it's a fucking hard journey, man. Like,
yeah,
you know, anyone that's gone through any sort of self-development or had personal coaching knows that it's confronting, and issues come up that you thought that were never even there. And it's confronting. It is. And it can get you emotional. And it's hard, but it's so worth it. You know, it'll take maybe a year or two, maybe even longer, maybe 5-10 years to get over it. But for the rest of the 50 years of your life that you have, you are free.
Yeah.
You're free to do whatever you want. You're free to have this family that you absolutely love and adore, and that absolutely loves and adores you. And it's just about living in that freeness and living in that happiness and living in that modality of love that just churns the next generation to live in a more grateful and happier environment, as opposed to everything that's come before.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
Cool, man.
Yeah, well, poetic.
Yeah, that's good. That's a good wee note to end on as well. So if people wanting to follow you, you know, really get to learn a bit more about mindfulness and meditation and see what you're up to, what's the best way for them to reach out or follow you?
Yeah, so I've got a website, danetewharaupo.com. I'll spell it out. So it's Dane, danetewharaupo.com. For those that aren't in New Zealand, it's a Māori name, which can be a little bit hard to pronounce.
I'll chuck it in the notes.
So head along. Yeah, head along to there. Follow me on Instagram, Dane_Te_Wharaupo. On Facebook as well, Dane Te Wharaupo. If you want some awesome and mecky and cool meditation products, then go to o-zenmeditation.com for all your meditation products, meditation enhancers. But if you want to reach out and get in contact with me and work with me one-on-one, then make sure you head along to DaneTeWharaupo.com. And if you just want to chat, just hit me up. I'm all open for chats and conversations and everything.
That's awesome. So the whole concept of this podcast is really to help people lift the veil that is either self-imposed or imposed by others or a combination of both, to really get to an understanding that they are limitless in whatever they decide that their life pursuits are. If you are working one-on-one with a client and you really wanted them to understand that they are limitless, what would the advice that you'd give to them be?
I'd say to look within yourself, because when you start looking within yourself for the answers, when you start venturing inside, and everyone's heard this old cliche, you know, the answers that you seek are within, and yep, they 100% are. Everything that you need to know is within yourself. Everything that you want to grow is within yourself. Everything that you need to move forward is within yourself. Go within yourself. You'll find that you have limitless potential in there. And once you find that limitless potential inside, you'll have the limitless potential outside as well.
Gangster.
Gangster, gangster.
Gangster, gangster. Thank you so much, man. It's been awesome having you on.
Thank you.
We've got
I really appreciate
it. Got to share some more stories in the future as well.
Yeah.
So I guess I'll be hopefully seeing you in Bali at some stage early next year. But aside from that, as always, we'll keep in touch. And for everyone listening, I know you guys would have taken a lot away from this. Reach out, get in touch with Dane, give him a follow. And that's really it. I hope you guys have learned a lot. I hope you apply some of this with your life and stay limitless.
Thanks, guys.